For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. This podcast is recorded and produced on the lands of the Djabal and Djerriwarr peoples. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, their elders past, present and emerging.
All of the patients would go through a period of conservative management. So they've usually been through a few years of exercise, physiotherapy, analgesia, all that kind of thing. So it is, even in that case, it is done as a last resort.
That was the voice of Associate Professor Andrew Morokoff, who is a neurosurgeon at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. Andrew is also a co-author on a new narrative review published in the MJA about the role of spinal surgery in the treatment and management of low back pain. I'm delighted to say he is our special guest on what is our last podcast for 2022. How frequently do Australians get low back pain?
Extremely frequently. So the problem is huge. I mean, some stats suggest that 80% of people in their life will have some episode of back pain or problems with back pain. I've had it myself quite a lot a few years ago. It's incredibly common.
Is it inevitable in terms of aging? Isn't this just what happens to your spine as you get old?
I wouldn't say inevitable, but yeah, it is a big problem, extremely common. I mean, sometimes associated with trauma and work injuries, car accidents seem to trigger it off sometimes. Most of the diagnosis is just what we call degenerative spine disease.
And how often does it self-resolve?
I think most of the time it does self-resolve, and that's you know, one of the key issues, is that most episodes are self-limiting. Most of the acute episodes are self-limiting, particularly in young people. As we get older, I think the pattern seems to be more chronic flare-ups and then periods of resolution. And I see that very commonly. And people say, look, I've had issues for a year or two, and then I had a good couple of years, and then it came back again. So there's often a long history of ups and downs with this.
Yeah. And what triggers that, do we know? Is it particular activities or...?
It does not seem to be related to activity, actually. I think that physical activity is kind of a bit of a myth, that hard work and physical activity and, you know, being a labourer and that kind of thing is what causes it and what sets it off. But actually, I think that more general physiologic causes and psychological causes are just as important. So it's related to general health. It's more common in people with things like diabetes and smoking, and it's more common in people that are having other stresses in their life and, you know, associated with depression and general life stress as well. Yeah. So it's a very complex area, and there's many factors that play into it.
How often do we resort to surgery?
A lot is the answer. 80% of people in their lifetime had some kind of back issue. My guess would be around 10% probably have surgery. So it is still a minority. But then we need to distinguish a little bit between what is surgery just for back pain and what surgery for other spine causes. And that's part of what we focused this review paper on, was particularly the controversial topic of surgery for just for back pain.
And what kind of surgery are we talking about in those instances?
So surgery for back pain is often fusion surgery, and fusion surgery has been around for many years, you know, 50, 60 years, and the technology has changed and evolved, certainly. And in fact, now we have arthroplasty surgery, so disc replacement with an artificial disc. It's not done that often, but that's kind of a non-fusion option for surgery. There's a whole lot of other surgery that we more commonly do as neurosurgeons and spine surgeons, which is kind of, you could classify as nerve decompression surgery, which is often just a discectomy or a laminectomy without putting any metal or instrumentation.
For low back pain only, when is spinal surgery absolutely the treatment of choice?
For low back pain only, the answer is very variable depending on who you talk to. I mean, I wouldn't go as far to state it as that it is an absolute treatment of choice. Every patient that has just low back pain, and we're talking patients that don't have any high-risk issues, right? So they don't have severe nerve compression, they don't have severe instability, they don't have a tumour or trauma or anything like that. What they mainly have is what's called disc degenerative disease. And if you do an MRI on them, it looks like a dark disc. Sometimes it's squashed down or collapsed a bit. But that's basically all they've got. It's commonly known as black disc disease because on an MRI it looks dark rather than white, which mm-hmm. means it's lost a lot of its water, its fluid.
Fluid.
So, you know, the question is, when is it a good idea to potentially fuse those people? Most surgeons, and myself included, would say almost never, right? So I have done that. I have fused people with success, but it's a very small number of people.
Yeah.
And it's usually in very selected cases. Now, I'm sure there are surgeons that are, you know, perhaps more flexible with their indications and do a lot of these. But I think most people realise that it's not a very reliable outcome in patients like this. So okay. I'll tell you the kind of patient where I might do a fusion for this.
Okay.
And that's someone who is psychologically fairly normal, to, if you want to put it that way. They don't have any other issues or stresses. They certainly are not related to any kind of work cover compensation or any yep. other influences on them. And then the key is to get the diagnosis right. So diagnostically, they've had scans that point usually to one disc. It's nice if you can narrow it down to one disc, and then that disc looks abnormal on all the scans. And there's MRI scan. There's also a scan called a bone scan, or it's a CT SPECT scan that can be quite helpful. It kind of basically shows that the disc is a hot spot. It lights up, showing that there's inflammation around it. So basically everything points to that one disc being the problem.
Yes.
And the patient doesn't have any other kind of red flag symptoms. And then the patient, you know, you never want to do this straight away up front. So all of the patients would go through a period of conservative management. So they've usually been through a few years of exercise, physiotherapy, analgesia, all that kind of thing. So it is, even in that case, it is kind of done as a last resort, is the common terminology.
Did the review show that we're performing spinal surgeries too much for low back pain?
Our review paper didn't specifically answer that question, but the statistics on that have certainly shown that the rate of spinal fusion has been increasing massively. And there can be a number of reasons for that. So one of the reasons, people usually quote that to show that or to suggest that surgeons are being unscrupulous and doing these cases without any reason. But there are a few other reasons for that increase as well. One of the reasons is that our population is getting older. We have an aging population. So there are more people that are getting older and getting back issues.
I'm chatting today with neurosurgeon Associate Professor Andrew Morokoff, who is a co-author of a new narrative review published by the MJA on spinal surgery for the treatment of low back pain. The full link to that review is available in the show notes to this podcast. This is episode 54 from the MJA in 2022, and it is also the last of the year. I want to thank all my guests who have been happy to sit and chat with me about their research and the state of the medical world in general. It's been an absolute delight to talk with each and every one. Here at the MJA podcast, we wish you a fabulous summer break when it comes to you, and all the best for 2023 when it finally gets here. Let's get back to our chat with Andrew.
And the second reason is that a lot of these operations that we do rely on newer technologies that have become available in the last 10 or 15 years. A lot of them are minimally invasive or keyhole technologies. So
right.
They actually make it safer and more possible to do these operations much more safely,
okay.
particularly in older people.
So that makes it more attractive, doesn't it?
It's much more attractive, yeah.
Yeah.
When I started neurosurgery 20 years ago or odd now, these kind of operations weren't done, but it just wasn't their technology. It involved doing a massive open fusion,
mm-hmm.
which is a big cut, a lot of blood loss, a lot of pain, yeah. slow recovery. And some of the newer ways of doing it mean that we've seriously converted a four-hour operation into a 30-minute operation with no
wow.
blood loss.
Fantastic.
So that does actually make it more viable to do if you've got, you know, an 80-year-old with comorbidities. Although those statistics about the increasing number of fusions don't really narrow it down to subgroups of diagnoses. They just say, oh, look, there's a lot more fusions being done than there used to be.
Is this about patient selection, Andrew? I mean, yeah, how do we narrow it down so that we're getting the absolutely right people getting the surgery if it's indicated?
Yep. No, you're right. It is absolutely about patient selection and about doing it for the right indications. And
yeah.
about making, as I said, the correct diagnosis. And that's that's another thing that we've got a lot better at doing. I mean, just having MRIs, you know, when I started training, we didn't have MRIs back in the late 90s, 2000. And now there's an MRI in every street corner, and they are a lot better. So it is the most fantastic advance in terms of seeing what the problem is. Most of the indication for these surgery, from our point of view, is people that have severe nerve issues. So severe sciatica, severe nerve pain, persisting usually for more than 6 months, not responding to medication. Often they will also have a neurological compromise. So they'll have a foot drop or a weak leg. They can't walk. They're using a crutch. They can't get around. They can't drive. They can't work. Look, that is honestly 95%+ of when we would do a spinal fusion or a spinal surgery for.
So where should the research be pointing itself for going forward in terms of low back pain?
That is a good question. And I'm actually not really set in my mind about where it should go and even whether it's worth going any further than has already been done.
Okay.
It's very difficult. It's a very difficult research question to really answer properly. So we'll just go back a step to summarize what we said in our paper, which was that we identified 5 randomized controlled trials in this area, and all of them were published basically 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. There haven't been any done recently. And then there were also a few systematic reviews to look back at those trials. And what we focused on were trials that compared surgery to non-operative management. As I said, there are only a small handful of those. Sorry, 2 of them showed a positive result and 3 of them showed us an equivocal or negative result. None of them were extremely high quality. So we really don't have very strong evidence. But the problem is it's very difficult to get strong evidence.
Well, what's the barrier there?
The barrier is actually measuring the right outcomes in a really robust way. So you have to follow these patients for a long time to really see how they go. You have to do a lot of very appropriate surveys of disability and pain scores, all that kind of thing. It becomes pretty expensive. And then you have to do it in a way that's not biased. So, you know, we prefer trials that are not industry funded. For instance, the Scandinavians have been excellent at trying to do that because they have quite a socialized healthcare system where the patients are quite captive. So in all areas of medicine, they've been really good at doing some of these very high quality randomized trials. And one of those papers in back pain is from Sweden, and it's one of the best. In terms of getting the right patient population and the right indication, the right outcome, it's very difficult. And I don't see that it's easy for anyone to really do a proper trial that will ever answer that question. Yeah. I'm sure we'll get some, you know, ongoing funded trials that will show that one particular gadget is better than another, but it's not going to really help us. And the other problem with trials in general is that the problem is that there's a trade-off. You can do a really high-quality trial. The answer it gets is very small. So to do a really high-quality trial, we have to sort of narrow down the question to such a small question that by the end it's not really an important question.
Yes.
I doubt we'll ever really get a good answer on that. And I think the other side of your question is how do we go forward? I think the answer is involving training and education of surgeons and practitioners and all related health people that deal with this issue.
Because it is a complex problem, isn't it? It needs solutions.
It is very complex, And it's not just a question of, you know, you see one patient at one point in time, like you have to guess what difference is that going to make to them in 5 years. So a surgeon often plays a small part in their life over a year, and they may or may not decide to operate. The real question is, you know, over many, many years, and this is a chronic condition, what's the best mix of having conservative management for a few years and maybe they'll get a bit better, then having one operation that might work all right, and then more conservative management and then maybe another operation. So it's not just saying, do I want one operation or one, you know, week of physio? It's actually what's the best plan for their whole life, and that's hard to answer as well. A lot of the studies were done prior to some of these new technologies coming out.
Yes. So
I think it would be interesting. And look, there have been studies on these new minimally invasive and artificial discs, but not a lot. So maybe over the next 10 years we'll get something better related to them. Then we mentioned at the end something we haven't touched on, which is the whole field of pain management. And that has been a fascinating huge growth in that specialty over the last few years. And it's been, it's good and bad. It's been good in a way that there are specialists and doctors and teams interested in treating people with pain, because 10 years ago they were basically completely ignored and said, just, you know, deal with it yourself. A much more active specialty now. They can do certain interventions. Some of the newer injections and electric radio frequency type treatments. There's a trial out of Germany recently that showed some benefit from electrically modulating the pain generating nerves in the end plate of the disc. So there's a few newer ideas like that. But I'm glad that there is a specialty that is now focused on, we could say, conservative treatment of back pain. That's not just surgery or nothing.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.